And we'll be focusing on this particular question in our time together this morning. How should we explain the imprecatory Psalms? And Dee is scrunching up her face. That may be a term that you're not familiar with. And so let me begin by defining imprecation. The dictionary says that it means to invoke evil or a curse upon. Comes from a Latin term. An imprecation is an invocation of judgment, calamity, or curse uttered against one's enemies or the enemies of God. There are several imprecatory psalms that call down curses upon enemies. And they can be quite troubling to Bible students because, first of all, as you well know, the Bible condemns vengeance and taking retaliation. And yet, these imprecatory psalms call down retribution on the enemies. Let me give you some examples of imprecation in the psalms. In Psalm 58 and verse 6, the psalmist says, "Break their teeth in their mouth, O God. Break out the fangs of the young lions, O Lord." Verse 8, "Let them be like a snail which melts away as it goes, like a stillborn child of a woman, that they may not see the sun." How many of you have seen a snail shriveled up on the sidewalk? When we lived in Louisville, we had snails, and you would see those snails shriveled up on the sidewalk. And the psalmist is saying, let that happen to the enemies. Verse 10, "The righteous shall rejoice when he sees the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked." Roger just went like this. Psalm 109, "Let his days be few, and let another take his office. Let his children be fatherless, and his wife a widow. Let his children continually be vagabonds and beg. Let them seek their bread also from their desolate places." Verse 12, "Let there be none to extend mercy to him, nor let there be any to favor his fatherless children." Do you find that troubling? Verse 13, "Let his posterity be cut off." Verse 15, "Let them be continually before the Lord, that he may cut off the memory of them from the earth." And then perhaps the most graphic imprecation in the psalm, Psalm 137, "Remember, O Lord, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it to its very foundation. O daughter of Babylon, who are to be destroyed? Happy the one who repays you as you have served us. Happy the one who takes and dashes your little ones against the rock." So what are we to say about the imprecatory psalms? Perhaps we have not been troubled by the imprecatory psalms because we are so unfamiliar with the psalms, we didn't even know these statements were in the Bible, but they are there. And skeptics and critics of the Bible will sometimes bring this up. The 19th century commentator Albert Barnes had this to say, "Perhaps there is no part of the Bible that gives more perplexity and pain to its readers than this. perhaps nothing that constitutes a more plausible objection to the belief that the Psalms are productions of inspired men than the spirit of revenge which they sometimes seem to breathe, and the spirit of cherished malice and implacableness which the writers seem to manifest. Now, scholars count the imprecatory Psalms differently. Here's a list of 14. Some might have more or some might have less, but let me point out to you that the 14 Psalms that are on this chart are written by David and Asaph and by an anonymous writer. It might be more accurate for us to talk about imprecatory passages. And in this verse, or this chart, I have 98 verses from 32 Psalms. But brothers and sisters, imprecation is not just found in the Psalms, it's found in other places in the Bible. The prayer of Moses, the song of Deborah, the prayers of Jeremiah and Nehemiah. It's found even in the epistles of Paul, and it's found in the book of Revelation. And so what are we to say about those troubling imprecations? Willem van Gemeren makes this observation: in these prayers, the people of God prayed for the Lord's judgment, vengeance, and curse on their enemies. Their hatred for their enemies seems so opposed to the teaching of Jesus Christ and to the Christian emphasis on love that we must ask, how can a Christian read, sing, or pray the imprecatory Psalms? How do these expressions of hatred correspond to Christ's teaching on love? Those are good questions. And by the way, in some of the Psalms that Barry has brought to our attention recently in our Sunday morning Bible class, there have been imprecations. In addition to all of that, there are Psalms that contain imprecation that are quoted in the New Testament. And so what are we to say? How should we explain the imprecatory Psalms? Well, there are several things that I think we can and should notice. First of all, we need to realize that ancient Near Eastern poetry was more graphic and vivid than perhaps the poetry that we are used to. John W. Halley, in his book Alleged Discrepancies of the Bible, says, where we should ask that the divine honor and justice might be vindicated, the Eastern poet would pray that thy foot may be dipped in the blood of thine enemies and the tongue of thy dogs in the same. Ancient Near Eastern poetry was much more graphic than the poetry that we are used to in the West. The commentator Derek Kidner says, here we should notice that invective has its own rhetoric, in which horror may be piled up on horror more to express the speaker's sense of outrage than to spell out the penalties he literally intends. We also need to realize that the imprecation in the Psalms was prompted by great and inveterate wickedness. We're not talking about people calling down a curse because somebody snubbed us or slighted us. No, imprecation in the Psalms was called out because of great wickedness. Kidner says it is fair to point out that the words wrung from these sufferers as they plead their case are a measure of the deeds which provoked them. retribution was called down upon extremely wicked people who had committed heinous acts. For example, in Psalm 79, the psalm begins in verse 1 with these words, "O God, the nations have come into your inheritance. Your holy temple they have defiled. They have laid Jerusalem in heaps. The dead bodies of your servants they have given as food for the birds of the heavens. The flesh of your saints to the beasts of the earth. Their blood they have shed like water all around Jerusalem, and there was no one to bury them." And then skipping down to verse 12, the psalmist says, "And return to our neighbors sevenfold into their bosom their reproach with which they have reproached you, O Lord." Imprecation was called down upon those who had returned evil for good. The psalmist writes in Psalm 109, verse 4 and 5, "In return for my love, they are my accusers, but I give myself to prayer. Thus they have rewarded me evil for good and hatred for my love." Imprecation was called down upon those who oppress the innocent. For example, in Psalm 109, verse 3, the psalmist says, "They have also surrounded me with words of hatred and fought against me without a cause." And then these imprecations were made against the impenitent. Hallie is right, I think, when he says there are times when forbearance ceases to be a virtue, when the sense of outraged justice must find expression. Not infrequently, a righteous indignation against evildoers unsheathes the patriot's sword and kindles the poet's lyre. And so imprecation was called down upon those who were guilty of great and inveterate wickedness. In the third place, may I remind you that the God who requires us to love our enemies also requires us to hate evil. The psalmist says in Psalm 97, verse 10, "O you who love Jehovah, hate evil." C.S. Lewis observes that the cry of the psalmist may be explained because they took right and wrong more seriously than perhaps we do. It may be that we recoil in holy horror at the imprecations in the Psalms because we're not all that good at hating evil. But to the extent that we tolerate what is wrong, we weaken our allegiance to God. These writers say, "We whose anger ever trembles on the brink of sinfulness do well to admit that we could not guiltlessly voice these sentiments. But in doing so, we admit not a greater sanctity, nor a more enlightened conscience than the men of old, but a duller moral perception of the eternal significance of right and wrong, a less clear-cut devotion to God and good, and a failure to include in our portrait of the Lord Jesus Christ the New Testament insistence on the wrath of the Lamb." We also need to realize that imprecation in the Psalms was based upon the prior promises and prophecies of God. For example, in Genesis chapter 12 and verse 3, when God gave those three great promises to Abraham, a land, a nation, and the seed promise, God said, "I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Well, I can't take the time to read the passage that I'm going to mention, Psalm 109, verse 9 and 10. Let me just say to you that it is an echo of God's promise to vindicate widows and orphans. And Psalm 137, verse 9, is an echo of God's promise to judge wicked nations. We also need to realize, and this is vitally important, that the imprecations in the Psalms were appeals for God to act. These were the cries of the righteous for God to act to vindicate them. In Psalm 59, verse 1, the psalmist says, "Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Defend me from those who rise up against me." In Psalm 69, verse 24, the psalmist says, "Pour out your indignation upon them and let your wrathful anger take hold of them." Psalm 137, verse 7, "Remember, O Lord, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem, who said, 'Raise it to its very foundation.'" In the imprecatory psalms, the psalmists are calling upon God to act. That's vitally important. I would suggest to you that David is a model for our consideration. Because even though David wrote some of the imprecatory psalms, David did not seek revenge personally. He did not do that with respect to King Saul, who was trying to kill him. He started to do that with Nabal. You remember that story. And Abigail stepped in and kept David from making a very serious mistake. And when she did that, David realized that what he was about to do would have been sinful and wrong. And he basically thanked Abigail for keeping him from making a terrible mistake. But David certainly didn't seek revenge for Absalom. And he didn't seek revenge against Shimei. In addition to that, in Psalm 35, we learn that David did good to his enemies. And at Saul's death, David mourned for Saul. David called down God's judgment on inveterate enemies. We also need to realize that the imprecatory psalms are poetic versions of the Lex Talionis law in the Old Testament. Those words Lex Talionis mean law of the tooth. It's a Latin term. But it's referring to passages like Exodus 21, Leviticus 24, Deuteronomy 19, where God said that life was to be for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, etc., etc. And when you first read those passages, sometimes it strikes us as brutal and vicious, but it was not that way at all. Really, these passages are saying the punishment must fit the crime. and the imprecations in the Psalms are poetic versions of that. In addition to that, imprecation in the Psalms recognized that God's judgment would and should be administered impartially to all rebellious nations. In other words, these psalmists recognized that if God brought judgment against foreign nations like Thebes and Babylon, God would also judge His people. And if you are familiar with Old Testament history, you know that God did judge the northern kingdom of Israel for its wickedness. And later God brought judgment against the southern kingdom of Judah because of its wickedness. So we might say it this way, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. To say perhaps the same thing in a slightly different way, the psalmist recognized that if they were guilty of wickedness, they could very well suffer the same kind of fate. In Psalm 137, the psalmist writes in verse 5 and verse 6, "If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its skill. If I do not remember you, let my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth. If I do not exalt Jerusalem above my chief joy." The psalmist who wrote those words was not self-righteous, but rather self-conscious about his own potential sinfulness and what the results would be. At least in some cases. For example, the violent imprecation called down upon Edom in Psalm 137, those imprecations were made at least in part because Edom had trespassed the law of love and kindness. Remember, the Edomites were descendants of Esau, the brother of Jacob, the father of the Israelites. In fact, because of this kinship, Deuteronomy chapter 23 and verse 7 tells us that God commanded the Israelites to treat the Edomites with love, but they did not respond in kind. They rejoiced when Babylon came in and conquered Judah. And since Edom encouraged the Babylonians in their destruction of Jerusalem, they were partakers in that destruction. Accordingly, the lex talionis principle meant that Edom, in some sense, was culpable and should be destroyed. This is in perfect accord with God's promise to Abraham, "The one who curses you, I will curse." Is it not true that today, when someone violates the law of love and kindness, we mete out the severest punishment? But there's something else that we need to recognize about the imprecatory Psalms, and that is that ultimately, the psalmist desired the salvation of the wicked. Listen to what the psalmist says in Psalm 83, beginning in verse 16. "Fill their faces with shame." Now listen to what he says next. "That they may seek your name, O Lord. Let them be confounded and dismayed forever. Yes, let them be put to shame and perish, that they may know that you, whose name alone is the Lord, are the Most High over all the earth. Ultimately, the psalmist was hoping that God's punishment on these wicked nations would result in them coming to know the Lord. There's something else that we need to recognize about punishment, and that is that sometimes God's judgment inevitably leads to suffering by innocent people. Notice what Ezekiel says in Ezekiel chapter 21. And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face toward Jerusalem, preach against the holy places, and prophesy against the land of Israel, and say to the land of Israel, Thus says the Lord, Behold, I am against you, and I will draw my sword out of its sheath and cut off both righteous and wicked from you. Because I will cut off both righteous and wicked from you, therefore my sword shall go out of its sheath against all flesh from south to north, that all flesh may know that I, the Lord, have drawn my sword out of its sheath. It shall not return any more. You see, sometimes when God brought judgment, there were righteous people who suffered as a result. Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were carried away into Babylonian captivity in 605. And in 597, Ezekiel was carried away into captivity. And Jeremiah suffered when the Babylonians came back in 586 BC. Sometimes God can't punish the wicked without the innocent suffering. God's not punishing the righteous. He's punishing the wicked, but sometimes righteous people suffer. We also need to understand that imprecation in the Psalms sprang from hearts that were zealous for God. In Psalm 74, verse 22, the psalmist says, Arise, O God, plead your own cause. Remember how the foolish man reproaches you daily. You see where the psalmist's concern is? He's concerned primarily about God. They were prompted by zeal for the clearing of God's name. In Psalm 109, verse 21, the psalmist says, But you, O God, the Lord, deal with me for your name's sake, because your mercy is good, deliver me. Finally, may I suggest to you, and I realize that we've covered these points rather quickly, but I had limited time. Imprecation in the Psalms is based upon reality. Listen to what the psalmist says in Psalm 143, verse 11 and 12. Revive me, O Lord, for your name's sake, for your righteousness' sake, bring my soul out of trouble. But now listen to what he says in the next verse. In your mercy, cut off my enemies and destroy all those who afflict my soul, for I am your servant. I think Hubert Richards was right when he said, The victory of God cannot be had without the crushing of evil. It is an absurd sentimentality to want the one without the other. God can't rescue the righteous without destroying the wicked. the imprecatory Psalms are indeed troubling at first sight. But I hope that the observations that I've shared with you this morning will help us not to be troubled in the final analysis. Thank you.